morning.
Here we are again.
Yep. I'm not sure yet if it's a good morning. I've got some complaints today.
It's not Festivus yet, so the airing of grievances has to wait.
But isn't this the Hopnology podcast?
Oh, it is the Hopnology podcast. So where we air grievances every day.
Every day. Sometimes multiple times a day.
Every day is Festivus at Hopnology podcast.
Mm-hmm. All right. We've got a few fun things to talk about today. Maybe, I don't know if fun's the right word. It depends on what kind of person you are, I guess.
I suppose, yeah.
But I've got two beer complaints to make.
Oh, boy. Here you go. Because I'm usually the old grumpy bastard, but you're going to be the grumpy bastard today. So I like that. Awesome. Switch it up.
So I sent you a picture that I saw on Instagram that just made me, I don't know if it was sad or angry, but both of us have an issue with the milkshakey, slushy, smoothie things. They just don't belong in the beer world. But up until now, at least from what I've seen, and maybe I'm just trying to keep my eyes diverted from most of it, but up until now, they've always been IPAs. So I came across a picture of a Kolsch slushy with grapefruit puree and simple syrup.
I died a little bit inside when I saw that.
I did too. The worst part of it was that there was a garnish of a piece of licorice. That's not beer. It is absolutely not beer.
You suppose it was, we got all this Kolsch we got to do something with.
That's probably what it was. And that had come on the heels. I was talking to a friend of mine who's not a big time beer drinker, but they were out somewhere and a local place here that is not a brewery, but they're a nice Italian restaurant with a good bar. And the bartender is the son of the owners. And he is a beer guy. So he always has good stuff there. And they were saying, oh, you know, it was a hot day out. We were sitting outside and there was, oh, it was a really good beer. And I don't know what kind it was. And I said, it was the Kolsch that they always keep on tap. It was the German Kolsch. Oh, you're right. It was the Kolsch. That was so good. I said, yeah, there's a place for a beer like that. It's not in a damn slushy. Oh, so angry. So angry. You know, use the slushy to hide your bad IPAs, but don't mess with the classics.
Okay, you're like a 9, maybe 9.5. I need you at like a 4. Can you get there? Can you bring you down?
On my aggravation level?
Yeah.
I'll try. I have one more complaint and it's a little less severe.
Okay.
I think this one's okay.
Okay.
So this is just I'm going through the new issue of the New Brewer, which we're going to talk about some of that today, and they talk about new beer releases. And this one is I won't say whose it is, but it is an alteration on a classic. And it's a little something. I'm just going to say it. It's a little sip. It's from Lawson's. Mm-hmm. Lawson's has their Sip of Sunshine. They came out with a little sip, which is their, and they said it, not me, crushable beer. For you, when something's crushable, what should the ABV be?
I don't know where to go with that because I hate the term crushable.
I do too.
As we know from the Things We Hate episode, I don't understand what that means, nor do I understand sessionable. Right. So if I interpret what they're trying to get to, crushable means you can drink a shit ton of it, right? Yes. Now, what I think it should be ABV and what probably it sits at in the market, because ABV is creeping ever higher as a standard. So in the day, if you look at a true table beer, you're looking at 3.2, yeah, right? Somewhere in that range, 3.2, 3.5. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say their quote crushable is probably like 5%.
6.2.
Holy shit balls.
Yep. To me, anything above five even like I see 4.5, I go, that's right for me. Not that I won't drink something that's heavier, but when I saw it sits at a crushable 6.2, I almost want to write into New Brewer and say, I think you have a typo.
Yeah, that's embarrassing.
It's just wrong. It's wrong on a variety of levels. Okay, so did that bring me down a little bit in my righteous indignation?
It did, but you brought me down from a, jeez. Now I'm not happy anymore.
No, 6.2. Crushable, sessionable, all those horrible terms. Bingeable, you know. For me, I should be able to drink that at 2 in the afternoon while I'm still working.
Right.
That's what that should be.
Lawnmower beer.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. The folks who I work with in my day job who listen to us, and there are a few, are laughing right now and thinking they're now going to call me at 2:01 to make sure that I'm not drinking during the day. Or to make sure that I am drinking during the day.
What they don't know won't hurt them.
That is true. The wonders of being able to turn off your Zoom camera.
I suppose the can top popping, though, is a dead giveaway.
It is.
I guess you could say it's a soda or something. Or mm-hmm. Say, don't worry, I'm not drinking beer. This is just a hard seltzer.
Yep. Yeah. Then it wouldn't matter because it's – well, then I'd be made fun of instead of, are you okay? Why are you drinking now? They'd go, well, really? What? And they'd abuse me. So, all right. I think I'm in a better place. I kind of purged all that.
Thanks. Now I got it.
Yep. Now you've got it.
Oh, well, you put me in a great place.
Excellent. Well, you know, it's almost late enough in the morning that you could have something that's crushable or sessionable at this hour. But I wouldn't never call 6.2 at that, you know.
No. Ridiculous. The whirlpool of humanity going down the tubes is speeding up ever faster.
The day we saw the end of the universe started with a Kolsch milkshake. Damn.
Yep.
All right, let's give something valuable to our listeners now, because this clearly wasn't.
Why start now?
Oh, well.
now we have the pressure.
Can we have a New Year's resolution in August to start being productive?
Sure, you bet.
Okay. So, I mentioned New Brewer. The new Brewer is out. They are still managing to put out a full magazine even after getting rid of, a third of their staff.
Well.
Which is, I'm still a little dicey right now, apparently.
Yeah. I mean, is it new? I mean, based on what I read through, there's a lot of rehash content.
There is. And no proofreading, if that beer is any indication.
Yeah.
Still valuable stuff. It's an interesting issue because this is the one where they finally start to pick up on what's happening with COVID and everything. Mm-hmm. And two of the articles are specifically about business, keeping your business running and, you know, running a lean business and that kind of thing. And one of them, I don't have it right in front of me, starts with, in this current economic environment, it's almost impossible to write an article about business because by the time this gets to press, things are going to change. So let's just talk about generally how to run a lean business and hope this works by the time it hits the press. That's basically what they say.
Yeah.
Which is fair.
And that lean operation can apply outside of a crisis.
Yes.
So that's fine.
Yep. Certainly can. So I give them credit for admitting that none of us know what's going to happen 3 days from now.
Right.
But one of the articles, to your point about going back to the well, is about, they call it the hop toolbox, mm-hmm. but it's about extracts and, you know, what you can do, what folks are doing from a technology perspective outside of hops or using the hops to develop different things that will help with shelf life and consistency and cost and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And things like cryo hops and distilled hop oils. And this is all very sciencey. So I'm going to let you dive into it. I know. Let's lead
put
off.
Put that right at my feet, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to put it on a tee for you and give you the – I'm not a golfer, but I think the Big Bertha is the analogy here. It's that huge driver that you can use just to – but, you know, see, I take that back. The analogy's bad. Someone who's going to take this and run with it in a good way would be given a good driver. I'm going to give you a sledgehammer.
Yeah, there you go. How about a steamroller?
Oh, there we go. I'm pretty sure you're not a fan of these types of things. So why don't we talk a little bit about what they are, and then maybe, you know, especially because of the market and everything going on right now, our small-scale growers, is this something that could be beneficial to them?
Okay.
So we'll try to make this a positive conversation about a topic that you'd like to bury.
Well, that's not true. So I am fascinated by the lingo. In the parlance, we call it advanced hop products because of the nature of their design. they exist to solve, well, originally, they exist to solve a particular issue in large-scale brewing systems. And it started with alpha acids and different types of bittering molecules. I should say they're isomers of the alpha acid complex. And then they started, and by they, I mean the really big brewers like Miller Coors and whatnot, who still owns a lot of the patents on a lot of the advanced alpha acid products that make the whole skunking of beer due to UV light a thing of the past, which is why you can have, you know, beer in clear bottles now because of this Rho isomerized alpha acid. Ton of advanced chemistry behind that, which we're not, thank God for our listeners, we're not going to go into. But that's kind of where it started, saying we need better, more consistent bittering so that we can control our large scale process. And frankly, when you're running a mega massive factory and all your widgets need to be the same, Mother Nature and the variability you get out of a hop, cone or pellet is just too great. You can't have that kind of uncertainty in that sort of a system. So they weren't necessarily concerned with the aroma because, well, there's not a lot of hop aroma in Miller Lite or Bud Light or Coors Light or any of those beers. But there's the alpha bitterness that has to contrast with the malt body, right? What there is of it. So that's where that whole started. And then this concept of, well, hops have essential oils in them, and so does lavender, and so does mint, and so do all these other things. So why can't we just do an extract like that and get the aroma side out and use that on in the brewing process? And why do we even need the hop plant material at all? Okay. Valid point. Why do we even need that at all? So what it comes down to ultimately is why, really, in my opinion, the only product on the market right now that is an alternative hop product that is anywhere close to all the attributes you would get out of a hop cone or hop pellet is cryo hops, period. End of story. Good night. Everything else is an extraction of some sort, where cryo hops is not. Cryo hops is an actual, I'm going to make this really oversimplified, a freeze-dried lupulin gland. So they've physically removed a lupulin gland out of all the other plant material. So you have 90-some percent of the stuff you're shooting for in that gland, as far as, you know, aroma is concerned. So it used to be, well, it still is a powder, but now they've figured out a way to get it into a pellet form, so it's delivery is easier. But delivery in the brew house is easier for like dry hopping. But that's it. Everything else is a compromise on quality. If we're setting quality equal to, you know, at the highest level to the sort of unadulterated, pure, straight up Mother Nature form.
So you're talking about quality in terms of, yes, and you clarified that well about, you know, straight up comparison to Mother Nature.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the impact on a beer, I mean, if the goal is we're taking the hop and we're putting it in to add aroma and flavor characteristics, so you're saying that that you're just not going to get this when it comes to something like an oil, you're just not going to get that same flavor, those same notes at that level of specificity as you would from using pure hops.
That is correct. And several brewers and consumers would also argue that, well, you know, you're never going to notice that in the beer anyway. Well, you probably won't if you're, you know, a subpar brewer. But the brewers who are true craftspeople at what they do will be looking for those nuances and do understand their mechanics well enough to be able to pull those things out of what Mother Nature has to offer. And it's interesting because it's like in the day and age we're at, where everything is artisanal and, you know, and I want the essence, and we talk about terroir, right? Which, as we know, I think is bullshit, but that whole concept. But yet brewers or these other hop producers are like, yeah, try these other products because it makes your life easier and it makes everything consistent, and your Citra, whatever it is, will be the, you know, more potent and more intense and the same every time. That doesn't make any sense to me. Why would you do that? The variability in the natural product is one of the things that makes it so interesting and sort of adds more color to the brewer's palate. It adds more complexity to the system. At least for me, it makes me appreciate good beer all that much more. Now, that's the artsy-fartsy way of looking at it. The chemistry way of looking at it is, I'm going to get all the good stuff out of the hop as easily as I can and just sell that.
Sure.
And in many cases, the extract process is assigned to hops that really aren't of high enough quality, usually from a visual perspective, for pelletizing. They're secondary market hops. They're like, well, we got to get something out of these anyway. Now, there are probably other processors out there that would say, oh, no, we only use the best hops for this, blah, blah, blah. Why?
True, if you don't need to.
Why would you do that? Because your product is so much better than the hop in its natural state? No. You're going to take a crop that's A1 plus, and you're going to run it through a process where you, unless you're going through cryohops, or and then one step below that, supercritical CO2 extraction. Unless you're going through that process, why would you take a cone that is the premium quality and run it through a system that's going to produce a subpar product compared to the original? It makes no damn sense. So that's number one. Number two, the cheap way out of doing this to get a hop aroma product is steam distillation, like one would use with mint or lavender or something like that. And by virtue of doing that, you are very, I shouldn't say very selectively, but you are only able to capture a certain bandwidth of the overall aroma fraction. Just because some of those molecules are too heavy to come out in steam distillation, some of them are so light that they're going to blow off and you can't capture them in your still. So you're going to get sort of the middle ground. And again, at that point, what do you got? You have something that you're only capturing kind of, you know, do you just want the middle part of the rainbow? Because really, how much more do you need? Do you need the upside? No, just the middle. It's just fine, right? No, you want the whole damn rainbow, right? So why would you do that? Not to mention the process of steam distillation, heating things up, even if you're using a vacuum still where you don't have to use as much heat. You're adding energy into those molecules and you're causing molecular degradation. So not only are you not getting all of the compounds that one would get from a A1 class hop, right? You're actually breaking down some of those products that are within that, you know, sub-optimized bandwidth of aroma compounds you're going to get out anyway. It makes no sense to me. So who are the people that are going to use these things as brewers?
I guess the ones that are looking to save money, or they're excited about the next shiny new thing. Those are both
right
ways you go after it.
Yep.
I'm trying to think who else. Really, that's it. To me, it's a cost thing. Or if you're looking for flavor over substance,
well,
I guess, for a better term,
but I would for
a hot punch.
I would. Okay, you're looking for a punch in the mouth, right? Because you're not getting the nuances out of that hop cone. It's just not there. I mean, we could run chromatographs of these hop oil extracts, certainly the steam distilled ones, and what hops oil is one of them. Drives me insane. And then run that up against wet fresh hops, which is what they're distilling, and to get the wet hop kick all year long. Okay. Because that market's huge. You'll find that you're not only are you not getting the whole bandwidth, certainly the lighter fractions like hexanols, which make wet hops what they are, those are going to flash off on a warm day, let alone under steam distillation to capture. But you're also causing damage and oxidation. You just can't avoid it. So you, out of a steam distillation process, you're never going to have an optimized system. Never.
Interesting. And there's a brewer who they quote in this particular article talking about some of these and says that they emphasize the importance of the correct process. And as you just said, mixing it with ethanol, precise dosing. And what was the quote here? The aroma jumped out of the glass, maybe over the top for some, he admitted, but it is stable. So, you know, we talked about that before, looking for consistency, but maybe at the cost of precision and at the cost of nuance.
Nuance, exactly. And the stability that brewer is talking about is the fact that the aroma is present there, right? It's stable. Well, that's because you're only capturing a certain bandwidth of molecules that have a certain range of what we call vapor pressure. So they're capturing the middle road. The really light fractions, gone. The really heavy fractions don't come through. So it's like painting with a palette full of beige. It drives me insane. Just stop it.
So if you go back to our episodes on aroma and all the testing done, it's interesting. All the testing on aroma changes at different drying temperatures, and we talked about this maybe 2 months ago, to the point you just made before we started recording. We need an index of all of our episodes.
Exactly.
But you go back to something like that, and it becomes irrelevant if you're looking for this broad brush. You mentioned MillerCoors, and I always think about, when I think about them, the McDonald's model, which is that I want to make something that's consistent no matter where you walk in. You're getting the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful comparison to craft beer because, yes, I can get that same McDonald's anywhere. And it's consistent and it's comfortable for me because it's what I want. But I would never try to compare that to a burger made on a charcoal grill in my backyard with tender love and care and all that. That's done differently. And I keep going back to the word nuance. So if you want to mass produce and get it, you know, 75% of the way there, there's a market for that. There's a need for that. But we're talking craft here. And the word craft has to continue to mean something.
Okay. All right. Okay. I'm coming down now. I'm back down. So let's make this impactful for growers. What does it mean for them? So how can a grower get a piece of this extract action? Hot extract action. So there's really a couple of ways. And in most cases, like I said, I think I've said this, was it last week or week before? Whatever. I don't know. I have no idea how these episodes come out. So in the recent past, we talked about what's going to likely happen to excess crop. And I said, well, it's probably going to be sent to extract, which is a way of just sending it to usually supercritical extraction or liquid CO2 extraction, where you get a hop goo, right? It's a mix of oils, resins, alpha, beta acids that can be shelf stable for decades.
Now, last week we talked about goop and gunk, and
right.
Goo is a new one.
So I forgot to write the chemical formulas. I'll do that this week.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah, goo. Yeah, goo is also in there. But goo is a molecule. It's not an element, so...
Thank you for the clarification.
Yes, exactly. So how does a small-scale grower do this? Well, there are some processors in the Pacific Northwest that will take grower hops that, you know, you're like, well, I can't sell these. They've been in storage for a year. I'm going to send them to extract. And they'll do it, but you need like 1,000 pounds of the variety to do it. And last time I checked, it was like $1 to $1.50 a pound to process. So it's not free, right? It's not like, oh, I'm going to send these because to extract because I don't have, you know, I'm not going to have to sell them. I'm not going to, can't store them anymore, but you're still going to have more cost in a product that you can't get rid of right now. So that's not something to be taken lightly. Going to add more money. And then who's your market? Who's going to buy that? So, okay, they're going to send you back 2 cans of extract. Who are you going to sell that to?
True.
It's like you're not going to call up Stone Brewing or, you know, Deschutes or somebody like that, even in the craft space that does use extract. Say, I've got 2 cans of Cascade extract. Do you want to use them? No. So I would argue that it's really not a market for anybody who's got less than 50 acres to deal with, unless you've got a really kind of specialty or niche hop that you want to do an extract on. So, not a big fan of that, but it does exist. Could you do your own extract at home? Sure. I said steam distillation. There's plenty of plans online on how to build a steam distillation unit. It's pretty simple. Not a lot of science there, but the art is in getting the temperature just right, getting the cooling just right, so you get the right fraction out of it. Then what are you going to do with it? Because you're going to have to bottle it or package it somehow so that it stays stable, light stable, oxidation stable. So I'm guessing, I don't know for sure, but it wouldn't surprise me that the hop oil steam distillation products also have some sort of antioxidant in it just to keep it from spoiling over time.
Right, right. And now, certainly from a space and refrigeration perspective, likely it's easier than storing bags of pellets.
Oh, hell yes. I mean, it probably reduces your storage by a factor of 100. So there's that. And you may find, certainly from a customer perspective, you may find brewers more interested in playing around with hop oils or a steam distilled extract than an alpha extract or a supercritical extract. So there is some more market viability there, but don't expect you're just going to whip up a still and start distilling hops and get a marketable product right out of the tap. It's going to take some tinkering in order to get you right in the right zone.
Yep. And you know, I'll from a market perspective, there's tinkering to get it right, and you know, it's hard enough to get in there to talk to your brewers about, you know, here's why my hops are better than their hops, and we'll just take a chance on my hops. Now you're trying to sell them on a brand new way of brewing for many of them on top of everything else. So more important than ever to do your research on who's using this and who isn't before you go down that path.
And understand the brewing process. Mm-hmm. Because the brewer's going to be relying on you to tell them how to use it instead of just showing up saying, here, I made this goo. Do you want to use it? And no, not going to work. So lastly, the last at-home extraction method you could do is straight-up alcohol. So many home brewers have tried this. I see this on the home brewer forums all the time, where they, you know, get some vodka or whatever and basically steep their hops in it to do an extract. Yep, that is a solvent extract. You can absolutely do that. Get the highest proof neutral grain spirit you can, Everclear, whatever you got, and fill a bucket up full of hops and fill it up with booze and let it steep. And that's it. And you will solubilize most of the oils, you know, the oily fraction compounds, the water-loving aroma compounds, and some of the resins, some of the alpha beta might come out. But you're also going to solubilize the tannins. You're going to get the polyphenols, all that stuff's going to come out too. So it's going to end up having that bitterness, but it's not from alpha. It's from those tannins and polyphenols. But you can absolutely do it. It'll absolutely work. And then if you wanted to concentrate it, you would just let the alcohol evaporate. But understand that if you heat it up to make it evaporate faster, you're going to drive off those light fraction volatiles too.
Now, you mentioned earlier that, you know, why would you take a very, very high quality crop and do this? So, you know, as a small scale grower, how do I say this? You don't want to take a crop that sat out too long and is brown and is moldy and do this. But is there a line in the sand where you can look at it and go, this is not good enough for pelletizing, but it's probably good enough for extraction?
That, I think, is going to depend on what your acceptance criteria are. I mean, there is no chemical line I can draw and say, no, at this point, these have to go to extract because they're no longer good for whole cone or pellet brewing. That's really not the way it is. But if you're going to produce a product out of a process that's going to give you as compared to its best possible state, whole cone, is going to give you a suboptimal product, why would you start with a feedstock that is suboptimal? You're only compounding your issues.
That's true. That is true. All right, last question, because we haven't had a pronunciation challenge for me yet this episode. Oh,
okay.
Am I saying this right? Terpenes?
Terpenes, yep.
Oh, wow. Okay, good.
So terpenes are a class of molecule. They are usually, you know, volatile, but you have monoterpenes and sesquiterpenes in hops as we know them, and there's other forms, but those are the most prevalent. Sesquiterpenes are ring structures like caryophyllene and humulene, and then monoterpenes, which means they're just in a long chain, things like myrcene and farnesene are those compounds. There are others, but like turpentine is a terpene. They are a class of aroma compound in the hop constituent. They are absolutely not the only one and even the most prevalent. But I see that like in the new brewer, they talk about, terpenes. Yeah. What about the esters, right? What about the carboxyls? What about, you know, there's all these other compounds that nobody pays any attention to because, well, they don't put those names in print, I guess.
Right, because people like me would just get confused.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
I would much rather it say crushable on my beer than terpene.
Huh. They'll throw sesquiterpenes on there and just make, and people be like, oh, I really love that sesquiterpene hop. Mm-hmm. Okay. Dummy. Okay, I'm done. That's it. That's all I have to say.
You feel better or worse after all that?
Yeah. I feel like I need more coffee now.
Okay, well. But one more thing we'll chat about again as we mine new brewer for our episode content. And there's another article in there which as a beer drinker I found interesting, and it's about the third place or the third space. And this is the concept, this is the Cheers concept, that you know the place where everybody knows your name. And yeah, for the three of you who are old enough listening that remember that show.
Ah, yes.
The first place is your home. That's where you spend most of your time. Your second place is work, and for the majority of us now, that is also home at the moment. And then the third place is where you get your community from. And probably the easiest example of that out there is Starbucks. And actually on Starbucks' website, they advertise it as, we want to be third place. They want to be that third place where you go to get away from those first two places. So of course now everyone's at home. We're not going as much to these other places. A lot of them are open again now. We'll see how long that keeps going. But folks are starting more and more to drink at home. And I know I've got a problem in that I've got a very full beer fridge, which I don't normally have. It's a problem on a variety of levels.
Nice.
I think I've complained before that it keeps getting – the space keeps on getting usurped by like things like milk and eggs that we're trying to keep in the house. Where, why can't I have my next three Kolsches all cold? I might need them all at the same time. You just don't know.
Right. That's reasonable. So,
I think it is. I think it's very reasonable. I have a very intricate staging system for my beer cooler. Oh, don't get me started. So there's this concept now of what they're calling hiving, which is actually creating that space at home. And, you know, especially now, having your friends over on the back porch, drinking there instead of going out to that third space and doing it there.
Hiving?
Hiving. They call it hiving. It's not the same as cocooning.
Oh, okay.
Cocooning is when you just want to be left alone from all the rah out there.
So like my ground state. That's
yes. Well, cocooning is, you know, kind of, I want to be home. I want to be here. I don't want to interact with others. I go to that next level, which I've created this term, which is caving. Which is caving. When can I go live in a cave?
Ah, yes.
That's my end state goal is, when can I go live in that cave and no one can bother me anymore?
Nice.
But, you know, that's my own personal problem. That's my other podcast. Huh. So hiving is this idea that you're sort of creating that third space in your own home. And you have, whether it's having a nice bar in your house or the man cave concept. The man cave is very much a hiving thing, where you want to create your own social atmosphere. So it's still something you share with people. You bring them into your home, but it's there. You have more control over it. And more people are going this way. And now with the legislation that's allowing you to do pickup and take out of beer that you couldn't do in the past necessarily, and of hard alcohol for that matter, it's easier and easier to take time away from those spaces. It'll be interesting what happens when we come out of COVID if things, you know, to some degree, things will go back to normal. Some people just have to get the hell out of their house, which I get. It'll be interesting to see if there the push over to take home, to cans, stays higher than it was before all this. I think it absolutely will. I have no doubt that it will. I used to be very much a drink when I'm out person, and when I'm there, get a growler that'll last me a day or two, but then not really have a lot in the house. And boy, oh boy, has that changed.
Well, as evident with our national aluminum can shortage.
Yes. Yep. It's people are changing their habits. And again, so much of it right now is due to necessity. This was being measured back in 2018. This was already happening, especially with millennials. Those gosh darn millennials.
The hiving was happening?
The hiving. It was, they've been measuring it for a couple of years now. So it's not new to the COVID thing. But in terms of, you know, are you drinking out versus in more or less often? And that 24 to 31 year old bracket, they were drinking out less often, but that it wasn't that they were drinking less. They were just drinking at home.
I don't, maybe I'm a millennial. No, I'm definitely not a millennial. I'm a grumpy old man.
Yeah.
That's not, I mean, granted, I have my, you know, local haunts I would go to. I don't know. It's like the thought for me of, like, you know, coming home and, you know, whatever, eating dinner and blah, 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 and then going back out to have a drink, I'm just like, it's too much work. I'm going to drink at home. I'm going to sit in my study and I'm going to, you know, whatever. And I'm more, maybe I'm caving. That's what it is, Gary. I'm caving. Hiving because a hive is a whole social atmosphere. I'm caving. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you are caving.
Yeah.
You know, and it's interesting when you ask people why they're doing this. To some degree, it's safety. 74% of people who are asked, why do you think you're drinking at home more often than going out? They're saying it's more relaxing. It's more relaxing to be in their own home, in their own space. I mean, you think about the amount of money people will put into, I mentioned man caves before, maybe a really nice deck where you and a barbecue and a hot tub, and you make it into your own destination.
Maybe I'll call my study the Hermitage. Welcome to the Hermitage.
That works on a couple levels.
I put a sign up that says, we've taken a vow of silence. Go away.
I like it. I like it. You can put up all those angry bartender signs all over your own space.
And then exactly.
You obey them.
Yeah, yeah. I like that idea.
Speaking of which, little aside, if you don't follow the Angry Bartender on Facebook, my new favorite thing in the world.
Really?
Oh, have you started looking at this?
No.
He is a grumpy bartender. I don't know if he owns or just works at a restaurant, but just complaining about patrons right and left and up and down, and it is so damn funny.
Like, give me an example.
I'll have to look him up real quick here. Nothing's popping into my head just right off the bat. A lot of what he puts up there are Yelp reviews by people who are just completely irrational, complaining about the staff, complaining about having to wear masks. You know, here's one, you know, 1-star review. Who the hell makes Long Island iced teas with Coke? And well, the answer is everyone.
That's everyone. The
ingredient.
Yeah.
And so this person got just destroyed about all that. I had a guy pull a knife out at a bar to fight someone. Me being me, I told him he was going to be really embarrassed when I slit his throat with his own knife.
Nice. Sounds like a kindred spirit to me.
Oh, he's great. Dive bar, someone posts, dive bar is a code word for unsuccessful shithole. Always some drunk owner that can't keep the place in business. And his reply is, I've been working at a dive bar that's been open for 20 years.
Yeah,
you know, nice. Make your point.
Uh-huh.
Stuff like that. He is very, very fun. Oh, great story about a cleaning lady who was cleaning their bathrooms overnight the next morning said, "Can you tell the waitresses to, if they're going to do drugs in the bathroom, to clean up after themselves, please?"
Awesome.
So, the angry bartender on Facebook, my new favorite thing to read. Definitely give them a look. Anyway, we got completely off topic, but I think we kind of finished the topic, which is that you're gonna create your hermitage.
Yes,
I believe you called it.
Yes, the hermitage. And,
you know, and there's a difference between I think having that third space move into the home and just drinking because we're stuck in the house. Those are two different things. This is about when you're given a choice. Would you rather, you know, cluster at home and make that your preferred place to enjoy a drink with friends?
Mm-hmm.
That's what hiving really is.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, hey, I'll meet you at the bar versus, hey, why don't you come over here?
I think we're just getting fed up with each other.
I think part of it's that, and part of it's fear and COVID and whatnot and trying to be safe. Look, I've been out.
There's that, but I mean, even just the phenomenon occurring before COVID, mm-hmm. such that it was being tracked and studied.
Well, and it was being done. It was happening with the millennial crowd, which, let's be honest, they're much more of a texting. You know, I have my community cloistered group, mm-hmm. anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So if they one time too many went out to a place where they like the beer but don't like the crowds, for them to say, you know what, let's take that beer into our own place and make our own. There was something else in this article, and I'm not going to go search for it now, but something to the effect of people going to tap rooms and then saying, you know what, I like kind of the design here. I wonder if I can do this with my man cave or something, sure. or other. So sort of creating your own space.
Nice.
Kind of like how we've done on the Discord. We've created our own comfort zone.
Yeah, well, just you should probably put your pants back on, though, because it's starting to bother people.
What? Oh, on the Discord? Oh, that's
yeah.
The camera's up here. My eyes are up here. It's all up here. I was just saying I needed a better quality webcam. Are you saying I should stay with the low quality?
Yeah, and I actually go the electrical tape route. That would probably be good, too. I